Chapter 53. See the bottom of. Apostrophe apostrophe, I know, apostrophe said Christopher kindly. We will wait for you. Apostrophe, he then drove on with Piketty to the inn, which was not far off, and so returned again to Engworth. Feeling somewhat like a thief in the night, he zigzagged through the park, behind belts and knots of trees, until he saw the yew, dark and clear, as if drawn in ink upon the fair face of the mansion. The way up to it was in a little cutting between shrubs, the door being a private entrance, sunk below the surface of the lawn, and invisible from other parts of the same front. As soon as he reached it, Ethelberta opened it at once, as he had listened for his footsteps. She took him along a passage in the basement, up a flight of steps, and into a huge, solitary, chill apartment. It was the ballroom. Spacious mirrors in gilt frames formed panels in the lower part of the walls, the remainder being toned in sage green. In a recess between each mirror was a statue. The ceiling rose in a segmental curve, and bore sprawling upon its face gilt figures of wanton goddesses, cupids, satyrs with tambourines, drums, and trumpets, the whole ceiling seeming alive with them. But the room was very gloomy now, there being little light admitted from without, and the reflections from the mirrors gave a depressing coldness to the scene. It was a place intended to look joyous by night, and whatever it chose to look by day. We are safe here, apostrophe said she. But we must listen for footsteps. I have only 5 minutes. Lord Mountclair is waiting for me. I mean to leave this place, come what may. Apostrophe apostrophe, why? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sol, in astonishment. I cannot tell you something has occurred. God has got me in his power at last, and is going to scourge me for my bad doings, that's what it seems like. Sol, listen to me, and do exactly what I say. Go to Anglebury, hire a brougham, bring it on as far as Little Engworth. You will have to meet me with it at one of the park gates later in the evening, probably the west, at 7:30. Leave it at the village with the man. Come on here on foot, and stay under the trees till just before 6. It will then be quite dark, and you must stand under the projecting balustrade a little further on than the door you came in by. I will just step upon the balcony over it, and tell you more exactly than I can now the precise time that I shall be able to slip out, and where the carriage is to be waiting. But it may not be safe to speak on account of his closeness to me, I will hand down a note. I find it is impossible to leave the house by daylight, I am certain to be pursued, he already suspects something. Now I must be going, or he will be here, for he watches my movements, because of some accidental words that escaped me. Apostrophe apostrophe, Berta, I shan't have anything to do with this, apostrophe said Sol. It is not right. Apostrophe apostrophe, I am only going to Rouen, to Aunt Charlotte. Apostrophe apostrophe, she implored. I want to get to Southampton, to be in time for the midnight steamer. When I am at Rouen I can negotiate with Lord Mountclair the terms on which I will return to him. It is the only chance I have of rooting out a scandal, and a disgrace which threatens the beginning of my life here. My letters to him, and his to me, can be forwarded through you or through father, and he will not know where I am. Any woman is justified in adopting such a course, to bring her husband to a sense of her dignity. If I don't go away now, it will end in a permanent separation. If I leave at once, and stipulate that he gets rid of her, we may be reconciled. Apostrophe apostrophe, I can't help you. You must stick to your husband. I don't like them, or any of their sort, barring about 3 or 4, for the reason that they despise me, and all my sort. But, Ethelberta, for all that I'll play fair with them. No half and half trimming business. You have joined them, and raid yourself against us, and there you'd better bide. You have married your man, and your duty is towards him. I know what he is, and so does father. But if I were to help you to run away now, I should scorn myself more than I scorn him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't care for that, or for any such politics. The Mount Clear line is noble, and how was I to know that this member was not noble too? As the representative of an illustrious family I was taken with him, but as a man I must shun him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how can you shun him? You have married him. Apostrophe, nevertheless, I won't stay. Neither law nor gospel demands it of me, after what I have learned. And if law and gospel did demand it, I would not stay. And if you will not help me to escape, I go alone. Apostrophe, you had better not try any such wild thing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the creaking of a door was heard. Oh soul, apostrophe, she said appealingly, don't go into the question whether I am right or wrong, only remember that I am very unhappy. Do help me, I have no other person in the world to ask. Be under the balcony at 6 o'clock. Say you will, I must go, say you will. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'll think, apostrophe, said soul, very much disturbed. There, don't cry, I'll try to be under the balcony, at any rate. I cannot promise more, but I'll try to be there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she opened in the paneling one of the old-fashioned concealed modes of exit known as jib doors, which it was once the custom to construct without architraves in the walls of large apartments, so as not to interfere with the general design of the room. Soul found himself in a narrow passage, running down the whole length of the ballroom, and at the same time he heard Lord Mountclear's voice within, talking to Ethelberta. Soul's escape had been marvelous. As it was, the Viscount might have seen her tears. He passed down some steps, along an area from which he could see into a row of servants' offices, among them a kitchen with a fireplace flaming like an altar of sacrifice. Nobody seemed to be concerned about him. There were workmen upon the premises, and he nearly matched them. At last he got again into the shrubberies, and to the side of the park by which he had entered. On reaching Corv's Gate he found Piketty in the parlor of the little inn, as he had directed. Mr. Julian, she said, had walked up to the ruins, and would be back again in a few minutes. Soul ordered the horse to be put in, and by the time it was ready Christopher came down from the hill. Room was made for Soul, by opening the flap of the dog cart, and Christopher drove on. He was anxious to know the trouble, and Soul was not reluctant to share the burden of it with one whom he believed to be a friend. He told, scrap by scrap, the strange request of Ethelberta. Christopher, though ignorant of Ethelberta's experience that morning, instantly assumed that the discovery of some concealed specter had led to this precipitancy. When does she wish you to meet her with the carriage? Apostrophe, apostrophe, probably at 7:30, at the West Lodge, but that is to be finally fixed by a note she will hand down to me from the balcony. Apostrophe, apostrophe, which balcony? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the nearest to the yew tree. Apostrophe, apostrophe, at what time will she hand the note? Apostrophe, apostrophe, as the court clock strikes 6, she says. And if I am not there to take her instructions, of course she will give up the idea, which is just what I want her to do. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Christopher begged Soul to go. Whether Ethelberta was right or wrong, he did not stop to inquire. She was in trouble, she was too clear-headed to be in trouble without good reason, and she wanted assistance out of it. But such was Soul's nature, that the more he reflected the more determined was he in not giving way to her entreaty. By the time that they reached Anglebury he repented, having given way so far, as to withhold a direct refusal. It can do no good, apostrophe, he said mournfully. It is better to nip her notion in its beginning. She says she wants to fly to Rouen, and from there arrange terms with him. But it can't be done, she should have thought of terms before. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Christopher made no further reply. Leaving word at the Red Lion that a man was to be sent to take the horse of him, he drove directly onwards to the station. Then you don't mean to help her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Julian, when Soul took the tickets, one for himself and one for Piketty. I serve her best by leaving her alone. Apostrophe apostrophe said Sol. I don't think so. Apostrophe apostrophe s he has married him. Apostrophe apostrophe she is in distress. Apostrophe apostrophe s he has married him. Apostrophe apostrophe Sol and Piketty took their seats. Piketty upbraiding her brother. I can go by myself. Apostrophe apostrophe she said, in tears. Do go back for Berta, Sol. She said I was to go home alone, and I can do it. Apostrophe you must not. It is not right for you to be hiring cabs, and driving across London at midnight. Berta should have known better than propose it. Apostrophe apostrophe she was flurried. Go, Sol. Apostrophe but her entreaty was fruitless. Have you got your ticket, Mr. Julian? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sol. I suppose we shall go together till we get near Melchester? Apostrophe apostrophe I have not got my ticket, yet I'll be back in 2 minutes. Apostrophe apostrophe the minutes went by, and Christopher did not reappear. The train moved off. Christopher was seen running up the platform, as if in a vain hope to catch it. He has missed the train, apostrophe said Sol. Piketty looked disappointed, and said nothing. They were soon out of sight. God forgive me for such a hollow pretense. Apostrophe apostrophe said Christopher to himself. But he would have been uneasy had he known I wished to stay behind. I cannot leave her in trouble like this. Apostrophe, he went back to the Red Lion with the manner and movement of a man who after a lifetime of desultoriness had at last found something to do. It was now getting late in the afternoon. Christopher ordered a one-horse brougham at the inn, and entering it was driven out of the town towards Enkworth as the evening shades were beginning to fall. They passed into the hamlet of Little Enkworth at 5:30, and drew up at a beer house at the end. Jumping out here, Julian told the man to wait till he should return. Thus far he had exactly obeyed her orders to Sol. He hoped to be able to obey them throughout, and supply her with the aid her brother refused. He also hoped that the change in the personality of her confederate would make no difference to her intention. That he was putting himself in a wrong position he allowed, but time and attention were requisite for such analysis. Meanwhile Ethelberta was in trouble. On the one H, and was she waiting hopefully for Sol, on the other was Sol many miles on his way to town. Between them was himself. He ran with all his might towards Enkworth Park, mounted the lofty stone steps by the lodge, saw the dark bronze figures on the piers through the twilight, and then proceeded to thread the trees. Among these he struck a light for a moment. It was 6:10. In another 5 minutes he was panting beneath the walls of her house. Enkworth Court was not unknown to Christopher, for he had frequently explored that spot in his Sandburn days. He perceived now why as he had selected that particular balcony for handing down directions. It was the only one round the house that was low enough to be reached from the outside, the basement here being a little way sunk in the ground. He went close under, turned his face outwards, and waited. About a foot over his head was the stone floor of the balcony, forming a ceiling to his position. At his back, 2 or 3 feet behind, was a blank wall, the wall of the house. In front of him was the misty park, crowned by a sky sparkling with winter stars. This was abruptly cut off upward by the dark edge of the balcony which overhung him. It was as if some person within the room above had been awaiting his approach. He had scarcely found time to observe his situation, when a human hand and portion of a bare arm were thrust between the balusters, descended a little way from the edge of the balcony, and remained hanging across the starlit sky. Something was between the fingers. Christopher lifted his hand, took the scrap, which was paper, and the arm was withdrawn. As it withdrew, a jewel on one of the fingers sparkled in the rays of a large planet that rode in the opposite sky. Light steps retreated from the balcony, and a window closed. Christopher had almost held his breath lest Ethelberta should discover him at the critical moment, to be other than soul, and mar her deliverance by her alarm. The still silence was anything but silence to him. He felt as if he were listening to the clanging chorus of an oratorio. And then he could fancy he heard words between Ethelberta and the Viscount within the room. They were evidently at very close quarters, and dexterity must have been required of her. He went on tiptoe across the gravel to the grass, and once on, that he strode in the direction whence he had come. By the thick trunk of one of a group of aged trees he stopped to get a light, just as the court clock struck six in loud long tones. The transaction had been carried out, through her impatience possibly, 4 or 5 minutes before the time appointed. The note contained, in a shaken hand, in which, however, the well-known characters were distinguishable, these words in pencil. At 7:30, just outside the North Lodge, don't fail. This was the time as he had suggested to Sol as that which would probably best suit her escape, if she could escape at all. As he had changed the place from the west to the North Lodge, nothing else. The latter was certainly more secluded, though a trifle more remote from the course of the proposed journey. There was just time enough, and none to spare for fetching the brougham from Little Enkworth to the lodge, the village being 2 miles off. The few minutes gained by her readiness at the balcony were useful now. He started at once for the village, diverging somewhat to observe the spot appointed for the meeting. It was excellently chosen. The gate appeared to be little used. The lane outside it was covered with trees, and all around was silent as the grave. After this hasty survey by the wan starlight, he hastened on to Little Enkworth. An hour and a quarter later, a little brougham without lamps was creeping along by the park wall towards this spot. The leaves were so thick upon the unfrequented road that the wheels could not be heard, and the horse's pacing made scarcely more noise than a rabbit would have done in limping along. The vehicle progressed slowly, for they were in good time. About 10 yards from the park entrance it stopped, and Christopher stepped out. "We may have to wait here 10 minutes, he said to the driver. "And then shall we be able to reach Anglebury in time for the up mail train to Southampton?" 7:30, 8:30, 9, 2 hours. Oh! Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.